Don't touch that dial. You're about to join Securing Liberty.
I think a new world order is emerging, and with it the foundations of a new and progressive era of international cooperation.
The world leaders have come together to establish a kind of a global socialist system.
The Constitution gives us no authority to police the world or get involved in internal affairs of other nations.
Welcome to Securing Liberty, the radio program free from the left-right political paradigm. The program that will expose government corruption, address current events, and examine legislation as we explore ways to secure freedom for ourselves and for our future generations. Securing Liberty with host Debbie Morgan begins now.
And welcome to Securing Liberty Radio. I am your host, Debbie Morgan. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. I appreciate it. This is the second night of the FEMA National Level Exercise New Madrid Fault. Yep, started yesterday, continues through the 20th. Are we scared about that? Maybe we should be at least worried a little. Maybe. I don't know. Anyway, let me just say that the opinions expressed on Securing Liberty Radio are those of mine and or my guests and do not necessarily reflect those of Geo Media Network or its sponsors or any of the other hosts on the programs. Just mine and my guests. Also, Blood of Patriots is out, and we are proud of that. The film is about the Bill of Rights, and we found some interesting research having to do with how legislation and legislators and Congress and whatnot moving forward have changed the meanings or the way that our founding fathers and founding generation viewed what freedom should be. And I encourage you to check out bloodofpatriotsmovie.com. And if you haven't already pre-ordered your copy, you can order it today. We're already shipping. And don't forget to tune in to Rob Roselli's program, They Live, Tuesdays through Thursdays from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern. Tonight, my guest is John DiNardo. He has been studying Planet X and Earth changes and that sort of stuff since I've known him. Anyway, please welcome John DiNardo. John, would you please tell my listeners a little bit about yourself?
Okay. I'm a former high school physics teacher. I specialized in physics in college, had attained a degree in science education, and went on to teach high school physics classes for a couple of years. Then I transferred back into my original field, which is electronics. Worked at a number of electronics companies over the years, including 20 years with Bell Telephone Laboratories, from which I retired. So I have a extensive education in this field of electricity and magnetism. As you know, electricity and magnetism is one of the sub-disciplines of the field of physics. And also in electronics, we deal quite intimately with electricity and magnetism. So when I learned about the existence of Planet X back in 2002, I immediately understood the nature of the electric solar system. This electric solar system is a new concept that our mainstream scientists have not been willing to accept, because they have been embracing a theory that excludes the electrical nature of the solar system. And because they have invested so much of their prestige and money in that obsolete theory, or that limited theory, they are reluctant to accept the truth and to tell the truth to the people. This is all a part of the mainstream tendency for people to embrace false theories in order to protect their own positions. However, they're being forced now to accept the electrical nature of the solar system, and they're gradually beginning to allow the people to know about it with the false impression that they're giving everyone, to make the public believe that they, the scientists of the world, have first discovered this, and this is a new accolade for them to have adopted this theory when in fact it's been well known. And scientists have studied and strived to bring this theory into the mainstream.
And they fought it tooth and nail too, didn't they?
Yeah, they sure did. But now, in fact, even now, you're not hearing very much about the electrical nature of the solar system. Let me explain basically what it is and how that would relate to Planet X.
Sure.
The sun is actually a generator, an electrical generator. The sun spews out electrical particles, that is, electrons and protons. Protons are simply the hydrogen atoms that have lost their single valence electron. So now that hydrogen atom is simply a hydrogen nucleus without an electron. And that nucleus has a charge of positive 1, whereas the electron that it lost had a charge of negative 1. So because of the nuclear reactions that occur on the sun, we have a splitting of hydrogen atoms. And as a result, these positively charged hydrogen nuclei called protons and electrically charged electrons are spewed out in what I'd call a solar sneezing, or in what the mainstream scientists call solar winds that spew out in all directions constantly. Now, this electrical spewing, solar winds, becomes more hyperactive when there is an excitation. When the sun is excited or zapped by other celestial bodies that have an opposite charge, this discharging occurs between these incoming celestial bodies and the sun. And as a result, when the sun gets zapped with an electrical discharge from an incoming comet, let's say, that sun will then emit and react with a tremendous solar flare. And in some cases, what is called a coronal mass ejection. These solar flares, these high magnitude solar flares and coronal mass ejections spew out in all directions. Well, these flares are more precise, more targeted, unidirectional, whereas the coronal mass ejections are omnidirectional. So when the Earth gets hit by either type of solar flare or coronal mass ejection, the Earth's magnetic field, as you could visualize it, the Earth's magnetic field as a balloon, an invisible balloon that has an electromagnetic force. And that Earth's magnetic field normally is a shield against these invading or sweeping particles. However, the field there's an interaction, as we all know from basic physics, basic electricity and magnetism. There's an electrical magnetic interaction when electrical particles interact with magnetic fields. They push one another. They joust with one another. And if you can visualize the Earth's magnetic invisible field lines as sort of like a birdcage with vertical wire bars going up and down all around the birdcage, that's sort of what our Earth might look like. It might look like a rotating birdcage in your mind's eye. And you could see that when, in your mind's eye now, visualize these particles streaming out in straight lines, these electrified particles being sneezed out in a spray of solar winds and coronal mass ejections, when they strike these vertical magnetic field lines surrounding the Earth, they actually cause the Earth's lines to be jolted, because this electromagnetic force causes a jousting or jolting of this rotating birdcage, such that it's fed back to the Earth's core, and it actually causes a physical disruption of the smooth rotational movement of the Earth in its daily rotation. Now, when the Earth's daily rotation is disturbed, jolted, jerked in this way, you have earthquakes. You have to have increased earthquakes around the world. And the reason is, the reason for earthquakes occurring when the Earth's smooth rotation is jolted, jerked, or interrupted, the reason is that Earth's crustal plates are sort of like many multi-cracked shells of an egg. And as that egg rotates, it's rotating on a liquid substrate, which is called a mantle. That would be, the mantle would be analogous to the egg white within the shell of a raw egg. And as it's these cracked shell pieces on the surface, that is the crustal plates of the Earth, tectonic plates, they get moved because of the irregular motion of the Earth when it is jolted by these incoming solar blasts. When the Earth is jolted in its rotation, those tectonic plates floating on this liquid or highly viscous substrate of mantle, they're like pineapple slices floating on a bed of jello. They begin to butt up against each other, bang up against one another, and this is what we call an earthquake.
Interesting. Well, let me ask you this, and I may be jumping ahead a little bit, but I read a little bit about HARP. Wouldn't the way HARP reacts in our atmosphere and the coronal mass ejections from the sun pushing on the other side, wouldn't that kind of mess things up even more from the other side since everything is pushed out of proportion?
Yeah, well, HARP itself, even without, let's just exclude the coronal mass ejections from from this man-made HARP technology, or the use of this man-made HARP technology. And certainly, they know how to create earthquakes. They have stolen the idea from the great genius Nikola Tesla. And yes, they do create a tremendous electrical voltage that exists between the ionosphere far above the Earth's surface and the surface of the Earth itself. So it's like two plates of a capacitor, an electrical capacitor, where you have an excess of electrical charge on one side, which is the ionosphere, and a deficiency of electrons on the other side, which is the Earth's crust. Whenever you have this tremendous separation of charge, you can do something with it. You have an incredible amount of electrical potential energy stored between the ionosphere and the Earth's surface. And what they do is cause discharges. Now, I haven't studied HARP. I sort of presumed to understand what it's all about, but I have not really had the interest to get too deeply into it. But I can tell you, basically, this is what it is. I have a book written by Nikola Tesla, and he describes this, what I had just described to you, the ionosphere and the Earth acting as two plates of a capacitor, as actually acting as a battery. So this is how they can disrupt the Earth's crust at a particular weak point, at a tectonic juncture where you have earthquake fault lines. They can direct the discharging of the ionosphere down to the crust in sort of an electrified zap at any point that they want.
Interesting.
As far as I can understand. Now, I haven't, again, this is from my own understanding of what can be done, and I know they have developed this very fervently and avidly, this technology. They have the money to do all this, so I am quite sure they could have caused an electrical discharge between the ionosphere and that Indonesian plate and the Philippine plates, which are off the coast of Japan, and they thus might have triggered the March 11th Japan earthquake. A high magnitude earthquake.
Right.
Now, we have to talk about why they would do such a thing, but the answer as to why they would do this has to be connected for sure with the approach of Planet X. You see, these people are in panic. They have known about the approach of Planet X for decades. In fact, I'm going to tell you, it's going to be like 30 years they have known that this huge brown dwarf star has been approaching our solar system, and now in the past 30 years it has actually entered our solar system, and it is coming quite close. And I believe from all of my studies, I haven't seen it, but I can put pieces of the puzzle together, and I can tell you that I firmly believe that it is now this planet X is approaching our inner solar system. That means it's coming in closer than Jupiter. I believe it's right around Jupiter right now, but coming in closer. It is being inexorably attracted to the Sun. It will not hit the Sun. It will not hit any of the planets because of what are known as repulsion forces that exist between huge bodies. Whenever they get very close, there is some kind of a phenomena called repulsion forces. And this has been proven throughout ancient history that this, when this brown dwarf star came in on its predictable periodic cometary orbits, every 36 and a half centuries, it has never hit the Sun, obviously. If it did, Earth would no longer exist.
Right.
So we know that it loops around the Sun, does not hit it.
Well, let me ask you this. Have you heard the theory that perhaps we are a totally different solar system altogether than the one we've been taught that we are?
No, I've never heard that theory.
Okay. Then I won't ask.
I don't believe that's true. I think we've pretty well documented the fact that we have the nine planets that we all know about from our history, from our astronomy textbooks, and you know the solar system is pretty much the same what we have learned about it in terms of the solar system's members, including the Sun and the solar system's planetary orientation. It's pretty much correct as to what we have learned.
Okay.
Now this planet, this brown dwarf star, loops around the Sun. Now why would it come in? People ask, well, why would something come in? They think of it as a hoax because they figure, well, there's no reason why any huge celestial body would come into our solar system. Well, the fact is that there's every reason to believe that a huge celestial body would come into our solar system. And the reason is gravity. And I would like to dramatize that because it is so important. It's the most important factor that I can think of that virtually no one has ever talked about. Mark Hazelwood has touched upon it a few times in the past. But gravity is the reason why it's coming in. Well, gravity is something we experience every day in our lives. You know that if you hold a rock in your outstretched arm and then release that rock, the rock must fall because of the gravity. And by Sir Isaac Newton's universal law of gravitation, body A must be attracted to body B by a mutual gravitational force of attraction. And more precisely, Sir Isaac Newton constructed the formula that expresses the degree of magnitude of gravitational force between two bodies, and that magnitude is directly proportional to the mass of body A multiplied times the mass of body B. So when you look at the mass of the Sun, now if you look up, go to Wikipedia or some other scientific source and find out the mass of the Sun, you'll find that it is about one-third of a million Earth masses. And when you look up the mass of a brown dwarf star, now that brown dwarf stars can vary greatly from very small, from the smallest brown dwarf star to the very largest. But I looked up the size of the very smallest brown dwarf star, and they estimate it to be about 3 Jupiter masses. Now, one Jupiter mass is 318 Earth masses. So let's say Planet X is a puny brown dwarf star. It would be 3 Jupiter masses, and that would be somewhere around 1,000 Earth masses. Now, the question might arise, how do you know this thing is a brown dwarf star? I'm going to quote to you some of the evidence that I have that this incoming body is a brown dwarf star. This is quoting, I have in front of me the actual photocopy, and I put this out on the internet as a very high quality JPEG file. This is the actual New York Times, January 30th, 1983 article, titled, Clues Get Warm in the Search for Planet X. Now, in this article, I'm going to read, this is a very lengthy scholarly article given to the New York Times by NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, and by scientists at the other observatories, such as the U.S. Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C., and the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. One paragraph from this very well-written article is, more credence was given to the hypothesis that a brown dwarf star accounts for this mysterious force. This is the informal name astronomers give to celestial bodies that were not massive enough for their thermonuclear furnaces to ignite. Perhaps, like the huge planet Jupiter, they just missed being self-illuminating stars. So what the NASA scientists are telling us in this landmark New York Times article of January 1983 is that most of the scientists believe that it was a brown dwarf star. That is a baby sun that never got big enough to actually ignite. So there you go. Now, it's been defined as a brown dwarf star 28 years ago. Today, we absolutely know it's a brown dwarf star because it has come in that much closer. And scientists and people who are leaking this information are telling us it's a brown dwarf star. So there you go. You've got something that's got conservatively estimated, minimally, to be the mass of 1,000 Earths, equal to 1,000 Earths, coming in, gravitationally attracted to our sun, one-third of a million Earth masses. Sun. Mm. And when you drop that rock, you release that rock, it absolutely must fall unless it's stopped by some other opposing force. And there's no opposing force in our solar system because it has not hit anything yet, so it's got to come in. The law of gravity is the most profound, most convincing fact that you have, that Planet X is definitely coming in, and there ain't no way to stop it.
How is this going to affect? You've already described how it will affect earthquakes and things like that, and of course now we're hearing about the New Madrid seismic zone, and it is one of the more dangerous for earthquakes. Will this affect that as well?
I'm afraid it will. That brings me back to my question. Why would the power elite, being on this Earth and being subject to all the devastation that's going to be wrought by this planet, as it gravitationally and electromagnetically molests the surface of planet Earth, why would the power elite go in there and try to provoke an earthquake? This is my rationale. They know it's coming. They have underground cities. Governor Jesse Ventura did a True TV broadcast, which I recorded in high-quality video onto a DVD. The episode was titled Apocalypse 2012. You can find it on YouTube. I would urge everyone to go to YouTube and look for Jesse Ventura, Apocalypse 2012. He went underground under Cheyenne Mountain. His producer, Michael Braverman, went under there, and they actually allowed Michael Braverman to go in and talk to the chief of security down there. They have these military troops guarding this facility underground. It's a huge city, one of many, many cities that have been constructed, and we can document that have been built around the world, including perhaps what many believe is the Pope's, the Vatican's underground city, and the Italian Alps. But there are many around the world, but had been constructed secretly over the past decades by governments of various nations, Russia, Britain, etc. Well, I don't know about Britain because they don't have the kind of terrain to support an underground city, but I know the Queen Elizabeth for sure has purchased many large tracts of land around Denver, around the town of Crestone, Colorado.
Really?
And the Queen is for certain going to be coming here to the United States underground cities when the devastation becomes unbearable. She will leave England, and I have often urged people, you know, I'm hoping to maybe this broadcast can stimulate people to create an organization which you might call Queen Watch, to look for the Queens and the Prince Philip and the royal family to become sort of like maybe doubles, where they don't look the same as they usually look, and when they go out in public, you don't really hear them talk because they're afraid that somebody might detect that these are not the real, this is not the real royal family. The reason why that might, that pursuit might be important is because that would give us a clue as to when they, the elite, expect these tremendous natural disasters to occur. So when they go underground, we had better go underground too, or at least be prepared for something disastrous.
Well, let me ask you this.
And that's one reason why it's important to track the royal family.
Right. We are out of time for our second half of the program. Stay tuned through the break, and we'll be right back with an interesting question for John DiNardo.
You're listening to Securing Liberty, the radio program free from the left-right political paradigm. Join us online at securingliberty.com. We'll be right back.
One Nation Under Siege is a forceful unmasking of the U.S. government and those in powerful positions who are actively dismantling the U.S. Bill of Rights for their own gain and corporate greed. Reality Zone calls One Nation Under Siege an excellent overview of the freedom crisis now facing Americans. Through the research of over a dozen internationally distinguished authors, journalists, doctors, and military experts, you will begin to understand the massive and ceaseless control projected onto an unsuspecting populace by a government that may have finally crossed the line from a representative republic to a fascist empire. Featuring Dr. Stan Monteith, Jim Mars, Derry Brownfield, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Joan Vian, and others. Go to TakeBackWashington.com. and get your copy of One Nation Under Siege. It's all about spying, tracking, and control as we go through enemy lines drawn in our own backyards. Get your DVD today.